From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Family histories, emotions, joys, and sorrows get magnified at holidays. Christmas is a big one, the biggest in this country, so we have Christmas stories of longing, hope, joy, wackiness, surprises. We asked for some of yours. You shared. This hour, On Point Christmas Stories for a Christmas Eve. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What's your Christmas story from home or away, a war zone or a Chinese restaurant? That story that makes you shake your head with wonder. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We asked on Twitter and Facebook and online, and you sent us stories. We will hear from those on air this hour, and there are more at our website, onpointradio.org. With me for some stories on the day before Christmas is Kevin Allison, longtime comedian, host of the podcast Risk. It's a storytelling show of true tales boldly told. Kevin Allison joins us from New York. Kevin, welcome to On Point. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
You're a collector of stories. What does Christmas, what does this holiday bring out in storytellers?
Oh, I love this time of year. One of the things is that the range of emotions
yes.
that comes at you.
Sublime and terrible.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's a joy. You get to hear so much of people's personality in their voices when they talk about their families and their childhoods. It's my favorite time of year now because of that, because the storytelling is so rich.
I mean, it has this way, I guess all holidays, but this one has so much emotion attached to it, of sort of acting like a giant magnifying. It magnifies suffering, it magnifies joy, magnifies experience.
Yeah, and you know, that is, I always remind myself whenever I'm having a tough time, whenever things seem like, oh my gosh, this is a brutal period I'm going through, that will probably become an amazing story later down the road, because stories require ups and downs. You know, that's what makes life so fascinating.
I want to dive right in, and maybe with a nod to you and Risk, your show. You're good enough to be with us today. And we've got a wonderful story here that was won. I think it was delivered just last week at your live event in Los Angeles. This was comedy writer Danielle Kramer, big fan of Christmas, but wasn't always. She starts celebrating the moment Thanksgiving wraps up and keeps going with gusto until the big day. But she used to be the Christmas Grinch. Here's her story from Kevin Allison's Risk.
I was the worst kind of Grinch. I was a Nine Inch Nails shirt wearing combat boots, stomping Marlboro Red, smoking teenage Grinch. And God, I was so awful, like most of my teenage years, so awful that I can't even look at teenagers anymore these days, because they just are awful clothes and terrible opinions about music, and I can't even hear it because it's just like, oh, that was me like tenfold. It's so embarrassing. But the worst part about me being a terrible, terrible teenager was around Christmas time, because my parents loved the holidays so much. And I feel so bad, because I just wanted everyone to know how stupid I thought the holidays were. And they made sure that it was magic anyhow. You know, they just kept going with making the holiday so amazing for us every year. In our house, we celebrate Christmas opening, like Santa coming on Christmas Eve, because in our place in Akron, Ohio, in our neighborhood, there was this Santa sleigh that would come down the street, and it was on Christmas Eve, and we would come out. Mom would be like, oh, do you hear the jingle bells outside? Oh my gosh, girls, I think Santa's here. And we would go out, and it was Santa like coming down the road in this like brightly lit sleigh, escorted by a cop car. There weren't any reindeer. So that did away with some of the magic. But like the coolest part of it was that he had our very first present, and it had our name on it. And it wasn't just any present. It was the present. And you sat in his lap, and you open up the Barbie Corvette that you wanted. And Mom would take pictures. And It really did feel like magic. And while Mom had us out there, my dad would be in, he was in the house, and like he was being like Santa's elves, putting all of the Christmas presents under the tree, and it was this ridiculous mountain of presents. My mom just went, she went overboard, and he had to dig these out of the basement and the nooks and crannies and closets, and he's grumbling because it's so much work and we're just going to tear into everything. It's going to be over in 20 minutes. And everything says from Santa, of course, so the parents don't get any thanks, but it was worth it because they were making magic for us. As I got older, you know, I got angrier in the pictures, and I remember one year Santa had black eyebrows, and I was so pissed off that they can't even like have the effort into having a Santa with white eyebrows. And I started making known how stupid I thought everything was, and you know, it pissed me off that my mom had her every single knickknack and ornament and everything on the walls was replaced with like a Santa or a snowman or something that reeked of cinnamon, and it pissed me off that like we had to listen to terrible Christmas music over and over again, and you hear it everywhere you go, and then Mom's still playing it in the car, and then she's playing it at home, and it's like weird, terrible, like Reba McEntire Christmas, and like there's this like Barry Manilow, and this weird like Thistle Hair the Christmas Bear. Like, what the hell is a Thistle Hair Christmas Bear? Like, it was just stuff that you like. They're not classics, and she played them over and over again. I finally started enjoying Christmas whenever I got married. We together kind of started our own traditions. You know, you have your own house, you make your own holiday. And wouldn't you know, the man that I married, he's this tattooed punk rock Hail Satan loving boy, and he loves Christmas so much, like almost more than my mother. It's like, oh my God, are you kidding me?
Danielle Kramer reciting her story there on Christmas for Kevin Allinson's Risk. You know, the turning point there, Kevin, when she began to care, as much as she said she didn't like Christmas, she cared that Santa's eyebrows were black instead of white. You're starting to get caught by the business, huh?
Yeah, and I love the fact that, you know, that punky way she was a kid. She falls in love with a punk rock kind of guy, and then this guy loves Christmas, and that starts to change her. But you know what's really neat is that I was talking to her after the story, and she said, what's great is that now those memories she has of all those things her parents used to do for her that you know, at the time she didn't appreciate, now those memories are magical in retrospect. And that's an amazing thing, to think that something you lived through can be magical in a way that it wasn't for you back then. That's what storytelling's all about.
Let's go to Ashley Merriman. She sent us this one, author, attorney, former speechwriter for Vice President Al Gore. Here's her memory of a particularly special Christmas gift.
On Christmas Day, about 4 years ago, I arrived at the parish hall of my Los Angeles church, St. Agatha's. The hall shimmered with twinkle light. Decorated trees were everywhere you looked. Volunteers in Santa hats rushed around. On a stage wrapped in gold sat Santa on a throne. Elves grabbed gifts from a huge pile and handed one to each child as fast as they could manage. But in the middle of this merry cacophony, a 7-year-old girl stood, sobbing her eyes out. Her entire body convulses with each wail. I got a present from Santa, but it was the wrong one. I prayed and prayed to Santa and to Jesus every day, all month. I've been such a good girl, and I just wanted one thing. Her mother solemnly nodded, confirming her child's story, and I understood. I'd been tutoring kids at St. Agatha's for about 10 years. The poverty in the area cannot be underestimated. I've known of kids failing school because they didn't have pencils to do their homework with. So I knew whatever the girl had gotten at that Santa line would be the only present she'd received that Christmas. What'd you want? It just flew out of my mouth before I could even stop it. What if she wanted an iPhone, or a pony, or a bike, or a car, or treehouse, or diamonds? A whiteboard. What? She didn't just say a whiteboard. No, no, that would be impossible. No child would have asked for that. A whiteboard? The thing with markers that you write on? I love to write. and I wanted a whiteboard to practice words for school. Well, sweetie, when we had the tutoring Christmas party on Thursday, Santa came, and he thought you'd be there, so he brought your real present then. But you weren't, so he asked me to keep it for you. It's in my car. I took the still weeping child to the parking lot and my car just outside the hall. Merry Christmas! I sang out as Pop went the trunk, and out from it, I produced a whiteboard. And not just anyone, either. It was brand new, 4 foot long, and shaped like a surfboard. It was colored hot pink, complete with flower-shaped magnets and ink markers galore. For a second, we both just sort of gaped. The one thing in the entire world she wanted, there it was, sitting in my car. Yes, eventually she'd learn that things didn't always work out, that disappointment was a fact of life, but not that day. That was a day to learn magic and miracles happen. There is such a thing as a happy ending. In fact, on that day, I learned that lesson too.
Ashley Merriman of California sent us that Christmas story. We're talking Christmas stories, and you can join us. What's your Christmas story? Kevin Allison, please stand by. Listeners, call us 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Here's Martin Sexton, White Christmas. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
With every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Christmas stories, the ones you tell, the ones we love to hear. We asked for yours, and you gave us plenty. Kevin Allison is with us, host of the podcast Risk. It's a storytelling show of true tales boldly told. We get a lot of stories from you. We want to hear them. This is April, a listener in Norfolk, Virginia. She called in to tell us about how an unexpected little gift saved her first Christmas away from home.
Hi, my name is April. I'm calling from Norfolk, Virginia. And my most memorable Christmas was 1997. I was in the Navy, stationed in Norfolk, and for the first time, I wasn't going to be spending the holidays with my family. But some Navy buddies and I left work early on Christmas Eve, and we went to one of the dive bars just off base. And by early evening, we'd gotten to the bottom of several pitchers of beer when all of my friends left to go home to their families. And I didn't have anything better to do than just stay in the bar. So I woke up Christmas morning all alone. I had a rotten hangover and just a terrible cold. And I cried and I cried and I felt so sorry for myself. And then later in the afternoon, the doorbell rang. It rang and it was the FedEx guy. And I couldn't even imagine how much it must cost to send a FedEx package that arrives on Christmas Day. But anyway, I opened it up and it was Al Green's Greatest Hits. And it was sent from a guy who was in the creative writing class I took a couple of nights a week. And he'd never spoken to me before, and I have no idea how he got my address. But it was the greatest gift I ever got because someone completely unexpected had gone to so much trouble to let me know that I was thought of. And I spent the rest of that day dancing to Let's Stay Together and the best of Al Green's awesome song, Counting My Blessings. And I will always remember that.
Ooh, baby.
Al Green for Christmas, and it made hers. Kevin, people feel losses. They feel little gifts on Christmas in a really wonderful way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, everyone gets caught up in these hopes and expectations about exactly how they want their holiday to go. And then something unexpected happens that makes the day.
A little FedEx package with some Al Green. Dave's calling from Buffalo, New York. Dave, what's your story? Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi,
Kevin.
Hi.
Back in 93, well, currently as well, I'm a painting and drywall contractor.
Yeah.
And I was referred to this woman who wanted to get into her house by the first of the year, so the finish work had to be done before the flooring went down. And so when I was in my 30s, I could work like crazy hours. Worked all Christmas Eve, worked all, you know, throughout Christmas morning, And the cross the street neighbor by whom I'd been referred saw the lights on, and he came across the street and he invited me into their house. It, you know, I tried to defer, but I sat there and they had coffee and breakfast, and his wife went to, you know, the top shelf of the closet and pulled down some work socks and wrapped them up and gave me this gift on Christmas morning as though I was part of the family. And I was just the painting contractor. And I was so moved by their generosity. I think about that every Christmas morning.
You must have seen a lot of human behavior over the years, Dave, working as a contractor in people's homes. I mean, couldn't we do that any day of the year, as the old saw goes?
Right, right. But I try to be a Scrooge, but I can't pull it off, you know. people are having so much fun right now, you know.
Yeah, Dave, I appreciate your call. Listeners, we want to hear your Christmas stories. 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. And yes, you can go any which way on this. You've got people who love it. And people, Dana on Facebook says, bah, humbug, it's a famous sentiment at Christmas, too. Here's a story we got sent in from Nicole McKiernan in Attleboro, Massachusetts, talking about working on the holidays.
I'm a nurse, and two Christmases ago, I was working from 7 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. on Christmas Day. And my family, being the amazing family that they are, decided to move Christmas to the day after Christmas so that I could celebrate with all of them. And I will never forget driving home on Christmas night, even though everyone else had celebrated Christmas and presents had all been unwrapped and people were basking in their Christmas dinner comas. I was driving home from work, and I knew that I still had Christmas ahead of me, and I was just so grateful for my family and the way that they rearranged their schedule, and they chose to make Christmas special even for me, even though it was not your typical Christmas, and it ended up being just a delightful day. It's one I don't think I'll ever forget, and we get to reenact it this Christmas since I'm working again this year.
Nicole, the nurse, is working on Christmas, and the family just moves it by day, and why not? Merry Christmas, no less, is calling from Brandon, Vermont. Merry Christmas? You're on the air. Could that really be your name?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, you already know my name. I go by Chris, but my actual name is Merry Christmas, middle name Elizabeth, last name is Harriman. And, yeah, so I'm a Christmas baby, born on the 21st, brought home on Christmas Day.
And is it a gift to be named Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas?
Yeah, my sister got me as a gift. She tortured me for it forever. But I have a great story about something that happened with my friend and I.
Yeah.
She used to fly up from Los Angeles to San Francisco, and I lived there and spend my birthday with me every year. And we would go shopping, and we'd dress up in our Christmas finest, and we would put on our Santa hats with Mickey Mouse ears on them. It didn't matter how old we were. And we would shop all over downtown San Francisco and enjoy the lights and have a great time. And this one year, we were crossing Market Street, and it's a very, very busy street, and all of a sudden, we noticed there's this little old lady crouched all over with a cane trying to cross Market Street, and the light had already changed to red, and she was stuck in the middle. And so Tori and I, my friend and I, ran out there, and I held the traffic, and she got her across the street, and we said, well, would you like a ride home? And she said, well, that would be wonderful. So we got her into the car. And we said, well, where do you live? And it turned out she lived directly across the street from my house in San Francisco. Her birthday was on December 21st, and she ended up spending Christmas Eve at my house for the next five, six, seven years after that.
Oh my gosh, that's unbelievable. You meet your doppelganger stuck in the media and take her home and share the birthday. I love that, Mary. I mean, her gift ended up being to you.
It was so important to me because she was all alone. She didn't have anyone to spend the holidays with, but she still had a great attitude. She was not depressed. She wasn't down. She giggled all the time and loved it when we would pour a little bit of whiskey in a glass for her. She was 83 years old when I met her. She was just fantastic.
Chris, as in Merry Christmas, brought home from the hospital on Christmas Day. Thank you so much for your call in Brandon, Vermont.
You're welcome. Merry Christmas.
And that's her name. You know, we've got a story, Kevin, right on our staff here. One of our producers, wonderful producer, Steph Katsonis, who was born on Christmas Day. He was a Christmas baby. He shared this story with us of his surprising birth and an echo much later.
My Christmas story begins back in 1956. My parents were young students in New York City, poor as church mice. My father's brother had come in from Greece, an immigrant boy who still didn't know English, and they planned a simple Christmas feast in their apartment in New York. It was going to be small turkey and a cranberry sauce and all the good stuff. Well, my mother went into labor Christmas Eve, and they never got to make the Christmas dinner. So they kept, for years and years and years, all through my youth growing up, I could always see in the cupboard or in the pantry a small can of cranberry sauce, Ocean Spray cranberry sauce. And over the years, I saw the label yellow with age. And fast forward around 20 years, my family is now living in Athens, Greece, and we're sitting around in the dining room talking, just chatting, and all of a sudden, on a sunny, hot Greek afternoon, and suddenly we hear a boom come from the pantry. And we trot in to see what's going on there, and there's red, dull red goo all over the pantry, on the walls and in the other thing, and on the other cans. And we finally realize that that can of cranberry sauce had finally given up the ghost and had blown open.
Our producer, Steph Katsonis, with a long echo from the Christmas that he was born. Steph joins us right now. Steph, thank you very much for being with us. You're not in the studio today, but it's great to have you with us. Thanks for being here, Steph.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Listen, I've got this. People writing and calling in. The number is 800-423-8255. But here's from, looks like a fellow Greek-American, Steph. This is Stephen Karilianis, who writes to...
Karilianis.
He says, my mother passed away peacefully this past week after a long illness. And he says, this is a story that she once relayed to me about her first Christmas in America. His mother's name was Tula. And she came in her early 20s for her first Christmas in America. And this was in the 1950s. She had just been through the Nazi occupation of Greece and all the rest, born there. And her favorite Greek Christmas hymn was a Greek version of Holy Night, she called it. She comes to America. She hears a radio broadcast of Christmas music during her first ever December in America. And she, Stephen writes to us, her son writes to us, she was flabbergasted. She says, hey, they stole our song. The radio was playing Silent Night. He says it took her a long time to accept that this wasn't just a Greek song, especially it had even, German roots after the occupation, the Nazi occupation. That was hard. Stephen writes, so she ultimately did accept the story of how Silent Night came to be, and it remained one of her favorite Christmas carols for her whole life. Stephen, her son, is a musician. She has passed away just this past week. He sent us the lyrics to the Greek version that she so loved from childhood. Steph, you're a Greek speaker. Are you a Greek singer? Can we do something for Stephen's mother, Tula?
I can work something up. Stephen, this is for your mother, Tula. Here we go. Aia nicta se prosmenun me chara i Christiani ke me vlavia imnume ton theodoxolume me chara osana. Me chara osana.
That's Silent Night in the Greek for Tula, who passed away this week. Stephen Kardoyanis. That one's for your mom. Steph, thank you so much for that. That's
sure,
a Christmas gift right there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful. Steph Katsonis. Jim in Marblehead, Massachusetts is calling. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
To go back to the early 70s after undergraduate and before graduate, I went and traveled Europe for 6 months and spent 3 months at a kibbutz in Harosh, 10 kilometers between Tel Aviv and Haifa. And
in Israel, yeah, great.
Yeah, and so on Christmas Eve, the kibbutz organized a bus tour and took us to Bethlehem for Christmas Eve, and they had set up a video broadcast of the Pope saying Mass on Christmas Eve. It was sort of a confluence of religions and cultures. It was really quite a wonderful experience.
Jim, with that experience, I mean, there you are, plenty of Christians listening to the Pope and plenty of non-Christians right around you there. This is a holiday in America that blows up so big that no one can avoid it, Christian or not. What wisdom can you bring us from that Christmas of yours, Jim?
Well, I think one of the kind of the key messages, and this is really in the early 70s, you know, just after the Seven-Day War, and it was the sort of the almost spontaneously the folks at the kibbutz recognizing that a number of the folks volunteering at the kibbutz were non-Jewish. They had, for whatever reason, decided to extend themselves and sort of offer this really gift to us, which I thought was quite marvelous.
It's a very generous thing and a wonderful thing. Jim, thanks for that story. Thanks very much. Kevin, I've got one from out California way, where you were with Risk in the last week. This is from Diane, and I'll just give you part of it. It's a long story, but, you know, Christmas doesn't always go as planned at all. She says, I was the new assistant minister in a beautiful historic pre-earthquake church in San Francisco, 1976, and I was doing the midnight service on Christmas Eve, the one that let out at midnight. The beautiful redwood ceiling of the church was high above in the darkness, she writes to us. The sanctuary was lit by hundreds of candles attached to the ends of each pew. As the service began, there was a rustling and a tinkling and a howling as a robed man swept down the aisle and then up to the chancel, the heart of the church. He called himself Jesus Christ Satan and had recently been in the news for attacking the head of the Prostitutes Union in San Francisco. So now he came to church. From his robes, he pulled a dog, yelping because it was next to his jangling tambourine. He set down a container, and he pulled out a bullwhip and dramatically cracked it right there in the middle of church. As he did that, I tried to edge my way toward a container he'd brought in, which appeared to be a gasoline can, the kind you would use to put in the tank of a stranded car. I picked it up and was horrified to realize it was heavy with gasoline. I'll take this and hold it for you, I said, and saw the sexton running up the aisle and toward me. He reached for it, disappeared out a side door. The rest of the service, well, it goes on. The congregation lines up to bring gifts for the homeless to place under a tree. But you never know what's going to happen suddenly. You know, there's a lot of emotion being played out there, and who knows what stories right there in the middle of the best laid plans, Kevin, on Christmas.
Oh, well, I hope he ended up having an okay and peaceful rest of the day.
yeah. Me too. It's funny how people remember those times as much as the, you know, picture postcard, Courier and Ives, perfect times. The time that suddenly in the middle of Christmas there's a surprise. I mean, in this case, a bullwhip and a can of gasoline and Jesus Christ, Satan in the sanctuary.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. My family used to go out on these big Christmas tree hunts, and there was always something happening that we didn't expect. The tree would fall off the van and into oncoming traffic, or we'd get home and find out, oh, my gosh, this tree doesn't even fit in the house. So, yeah, it's always something.
I think I recall your sister going through the ice on one of those tree cutting expeditions.
My little sister, went right through the ice Christmas tree farm. And, whoo, Lord, we thought we had lost her for a moment there.
Every kind of story. Wet ankles, icy ankles. Kevin Allison is with us. He's host of the podcast Risk, storytelling show of true tales boldly told. And we're hearing your Christmas stories this hour, the ones you tell, the ones we love to hear. 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. On Christmas Eve, a little more Martin Sexton. I'll be home for Christmas from his album, Camp Holiday. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas, if only in my dream, I'll be home for Christmas, if only.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It's Christmas Eve, and we're hearing Christmas stories. The ones you tell, the ones you've told us, the ones we'd love to hear. Kevin Allison is with us. He's host of the podcast Risk Storytelling Show, True Tales Boldly Told. He joins us from New York today. You can join us, too. What's your Christmas story? We're at 800-423-8255. Jesse, you're in Nashville. You're on, Jesse. What's your story?
Hi, Tom. I grew up in Western North Carolina pretty poor, with a couple of older brothers, and so Christmas was always special when we made something out of it. But the year I remember, I was probably 6 and had by far the largest box under the tree, and I was so excited about it because, of course, that means a lot when you're the littlest of
sure.
three boys. I will never forget opening it up, and it was a hot air popcorn popper. But what made it amazing was that it was obviously a gift for the family. But from that point forward, growing up, anytime we got out that hot air popcorn popper, my folks would always ask permission to use my popcorn popper. And it was just one of those things that I'll never forget it. And it's now, of course, I'm heading home right now and taking gifts for my niece and nephews and thinking about that same sort of thing of how much sometimes something that's really simple really just means the world.
And whatever was in there, it was the biggest box that morning, Jesse.
That did matter. That definitely mattered.
That's great. Thank you so much. Leslie, and thank you, Jesse. Leslie in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Leslie, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. Happy holidays.
Same to you. What's your story, Leslie?
I grew up in a very small town in upstate New York, and we were the only Jewish family in town.
Yeah.
And our neighbors were Episcopalians, and I think it was Christmas Eve or maybe the day before Christmas Eve. They had some observance in the Episcopal Church, and we went with them to it. And I knew Santa was going to be there, and he was handing out presents. And I knew that because I was Jewish, Santa wouldn't know anything about me, and I wasn't going to get a present. I was okay with that. And he called my name, and I got a present. I was probably 6 years old.
Yeah.
I was it was so amazing.
That's a wonderful story, Leslie. Leslie, let me ask you, because I'm always struck by the generosity of so many people in this country who aren't Christian. So, technically, it's such a big holiday, but not everybody observes it, obviously. That generosity is beautiful. How do you look at it all these years later? There's so much celebration and hoopla. As you're Jewish looking at all that. You got lucky that Christmas. How do you look at it over the years?
Well, because, as I say, we were the only Jewish family in town, we did celebrate Christmas-ish. Because, we exchanged gifts with our friends. And, the United States is a Christian country. It is. And that's fine with me. As I've gotten older, I've gotten less interested in Christmas as a holiday, but I still enjoy the celebration and the gift-giving that there is.
Leslie, you're a generous soul, a beautiful, generous soul, and I so appreciate your call. Thank you for that one. Let me get one more right here. Deborah, West Roxbury, Massachusetts. Deborah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My story takes place on Christmas Eve 22 years ago. My husband and I took our 2-year-old to Christmas Eve church, which seemed like a good idea at the time. He was generally well-behaved, and he was Fussy Baby with a capital F. And no matter what we did, we could not get him to be quiet. We were so looking forward to the carols. We wanted to sing. We were so grateful to have a wonderful child. I was 37, and I was, actually 39 at that point, thrilled to have a baby.
Yeah.
And he was a horror. And he made noises like you'd never heard come out of a child. And we looked at each other and said, we can't stay. Everybody was like shooting darts at us with their eyes.
Yeah.
So we left absolutely downcast. And we're walking out of this big church in West Roxbury that will remain nameless, and hearing them singing inside the church, we were like so pathetic.
You were the outcast.
We were the outcast.
With the demon child.
We were so sad. And we had parked near the Bellevue the Highland train station.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's where my husband could get a spot.
Yeah.
And we saw two people standing there, and I said, Chapin, there's no train coming tonight. And they had big bags of presents, and they were very young, and I said, they're not locals. And we went over and said, there's no train. And I said, where are you going? And they said, oh, we're getting an Amtrak down to New York, the last train tonight, out of Back Bay Station.
Yeah.
And my husband and I looked at each other, and we introduced ourselves, and we said, get in the car. We'll take you.
Yeah.
So they got in the car, and of course, with the car seat, they had to sit in the back with fussy baby.
Right.
And they get in, and I was like, oh, gosh, please, don't scream at them. And they got in, and he became baby from the angels. And he was charming and babbling and smiling and almost singing to them. And he was the cutest, sweetest baby. It was unbelievable. And we were looking at each other like, who traded him in? Where did this child come from? He was charming.
Hey.
It was unbelievable. And by the time we dropped them off at the Back Bay Station, the three of them back there were singing together, little baby songs, little poems. And the girl looked at me. We gave each other's hugs and wished Merry Christmas. And the girl looked at me. She says, I hope I have one like that one day. And my husband and I cried, and I said, we were not meant to go to church tonight. We were meant to take these people to the train.
I know it's Christmas, but that sounds like good karma right there at work, Deborah.
Well, we were so happy, and that's why I'm telling this story. It's one of my best Christmas memories, and I was so happy to have Fussy Baby that night. It was the best. He gave us a great gift, and we were supposed to be there to take them to their train.
That's great. Until the angels sing in your back seat. That's just wonderful. All kinds of stories here. I appreciate that one so much, Deborah. Here's one from Ruth Shaver, a pastor from Shelbsburg, Pennsylvania. She called in to tell us about just some kind parishioners who brightened her Christmas.
My story is in Shelbsburg, Pennsylvania, where I'm currently the pastor of the church. I was adopted by some parishioners for Christmas morning, my first Christmas here, and that has become a wonderful tradition. And in 2009, when my parents were visiting and I was spending Christmas with my family for the first time in many, many years, because it's hard for a pastor to get away, not only did they invite us to come down to their house, they had gifts for my parents and stockings, and it was really quite a wonderful experience. And I'm going back there this year with three people who have become a part of my extended family.
Just to have the arms of friendly people thrown around Ruth Shaver there in Shelbsburg, Pennsylvania. And here's another we got from listener Caleb Keller. Listens in Ames, Iowa. Brings us this story about the lengths his mom went to. Well, you'll hear.
It's Christmas 1997, and I'm a 21-year-old sailor on the USS George Washington. It's my first time having Christmas at sea. So in late November, I'd gotten this package, this enormous box from my mom, and it says, do not open until December 1st. So on December 1st, I open it up, and inside this enormous box are all of these smaller boxes wrapped in Christmas paper, and each one has a date on it. The first one is this 12-inch little plastic and wire Christmas tree that I put up in my work center. And then for the next several days, the boxes are these little tiny ornaments that my mom has made to decorate the Christmas tree. And then it's chocolate-covered cherries, which we always used to eat after decorating the Christmas tree. And then it's a packet of hot chocolate. And it goes on and on like this until Christmas Day, all these things that our family shared at Christmas time. And then the box for Christmas Day, I open that up, and it has even more wrapped boxes inside, my Christmas presents from my family. So there I am. I'm in the middle of the Arabian Gulf. I'm thousands of miles from home. And my mom sent me Christmas. She sent Christmas to me. And so even though I missed my family that year, that will always be the best Christmas that I've ever had. So I just want to say thanks, Mom. I love you so much.
Caleb Keller in Ames, Iowa. And Caleb, that is a Christmas thanks that we can really hear. Marilyn in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Marilyn, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is a Christmas story about 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very extended family that comes in every year from the West Coast, the East Coast, to Denver, Colorado, where my parents lived. And my mother had heart troubles and cancer and everything for 30 years. But that fall, she began to fail.
Mm.
And so she was... it looked, you know, through November we got updates that, you know, it was not looking good. But the funny thing about my mother is she was wonderful and loving and elegant, except on holidays. So we called her Holiday Mom, in which she was turned into the most horrible person. But everything had to be perfect, and that's why. So we all come in, my five other siblings, my nieces, my nephews, the whole works. And when the last one got there, she died. And this was on December 23rd.
Wow.
They, of course, being my parents, had the funeral planned. She had picked out her hymns. They had the grave. They had the whole thing. So, being my family, we, of course, went ahead and had Christmas.
Yeah.
And had Christmas, and then on the 27th, the 26th, they had a viewing, and my adopted daughter, who's really close to my family, was giving guided tours to my mother, saying, doesn't she look great? So then, on December 27th, we had the funeral, we did our local church.
Yeah.
The whole works, we all went out to, there was a kind of a motorcade through Denver. My daughter, again, got the autograph of the hearse driver. For some reason, that seemed meaningful. And we had the funeral on the 27th.
Almost as if your mom had timed out this entire thing.
But we had already had our tickets for Christmas.
Yeah.
So nobody had to do anything. So we all left when our tickets were there. And so I came back to Wellesley, and people said, oh, how was your Christmas? I said, well, it was actually pretty good. You know, my mother died. We had the funeral. It was kind of perfect.
You know, it's a great story. Sorrow comes in there, too. It sounds like your mom, it feels like she had it planned. We know it wasn't that way. I appreciate your call, Marilyn. You know, Kevin, it's a time you can't help remembering. I mean, many holidays are like this, I suppose, for many people, all faiths. But this is one where you do remember people. They come back. I mean, my Swedish, American, wonderful mother who made Christmas so Swedish. So it's all still in our house. It's pickled herring and lingonberries and limpa bread. And it's as though she's there at the table. It sounds like she's there for Marilyn, Marilyn's mother there as well. The sorrow comes back. It's a little less, maybe very heavy sometimes, and other times less heavy because people are remembered.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And I love that, the way that those family traditions pass on things that were special to people that are no longer there with us.
It's great. Richard in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Richard, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My story took place in 1974. My father was dying of cancer. I was born and brought up in Massachusetts, but I moved to Oklahoma back in 1970. And our children wanted to go back to Massachusetts for Christmas. My youngest son, Kevin, he wanted snow for Christmas. And the farther, the more east we got, the less chance of snow there was. And on Christmas Eve, the news people and the weather people said there was absolutely no chance for snow on Christmas. It was not going to be a white Christmas. That was December 4th or 24th, 1974. When we woke up on December 25th, there was a foot of snow on the ground, and nobody could explain it. My son knew better. He knew that his grandmother, Penny, was a good witch. And so Good Witch Penny made it possible for him to have snow on Christmas Day, 1974.
Oh,
that was the last Christmas we were able to spend with my dad.
Yeah.
But it's memorable.
Richard, I love the story from Oklahoma City, and we've got it all, including Christmas witches here. One more call. Karen, thank you, Richard. Karen in Bellingham, Massachusetts. Karen, you're on.
Hello. Merry Christmas, Tom.
Same to you.
I'm going to try and be quick. It's a great story. When I was about 9 years old, my mother, we are from Canada, and my mother every year wanted to get up to Montreal. It was like, you know, from Boston to Montreal. It was her favorite time of year to be with her family. And So she would pile us into the car every year, and this one year she decided to do it regardless of the fact that my dad couldn't be with us. It's an 8-hour trip. It took us 2 days that year because we got into an accident. We had car trouble. We finally get across the border, and our car backfired as we were coming across the border, and then it officially died in what we used to call silo country, this really rural area of Quebec.
Yeah.
And a car pulled up behind us. A gigantic man got out of it and came up to my mother and said, listen, we noticed that you're stranded. Can we please take you, you know, where are you going? And she said, I'm going to Montreal. He said, well, we're going to this place called Nuns Island, about an hour away. why don't we take you on to there, you and your kids? And my mother, what could she do? She says, yes, we go to their house in their car. And my mother calls my grandfather. My grandfather says, I'm sorry, it's too late. I can't come to get you. So they gave us their car to get to my grandparents' house. And when we reconnected with them the next day, you know, we got it back to them. We exchanged addresses. They actually came to our Christmas party that year. My mother, we came home from this wonderful, you know, they saved our lives that Christmas. My mother wrote to them. They had given us a fake address. They were like, my mother calls them guardian angels. We never heard from them again.
It's a great story. They got you all the way to Montreal and your own car just dying on the way.
It was such a, I mean, I just remember it as the most miraculous Christmas. We thought we were just going to be stranded in, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And instead, we were able to make it back because of these complete strangers who were so generous for us.
Karen, I love your story. I hope you keep telling it. And thank you very much for calling in. Kevin, I think, you know, we could keep the lines open all day. And we've got many more stories that our listeners have given us as well. They just keep coming. You know, it could be, for any individual American, it could be a different holiday. Here we are at this one. And what great stories it calls out. I know your people have told a lot of great Christmas stories at risk, Kevin, and thanks for sharing just a little bit of that with us here today. We so appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. Yeah, I encourage everyone out there to tell stories with their families today and tomorrow, all through here.
True Tales Boldly Told at Kevin Allinson's podcast, Risk. Kevin, Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
Thank you so much. Same to you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Tell stories. They carry a lot. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Silent night, holy night, Son of God, love's pure light, radiant beams from thy holy face, with a dark redeeming grace, we are the children of God, we are the children of God.